Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction tribe? Tasmanian Devin here, and I am so stoked to be starting another deep dive series. My favorite. I love when we get to do deep dive series. We really dive in and really solve the hardest problems in the art of construction. And we're partnering on this deep dive series with Autodesk, where we're going to be picking up from episode 154 titled Connecting the Project Lifecycle with Autodesk. Credit where credit is due. Audrey Grubesic on her platform, where she just launched a cool new platform called Offsite Dirt for modular construction education events. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes. The start off of what I'm going to be talking to you guys about is that I went back and re-listened to the presentation titled Autodesk Making Prefabrication Easier, which was brought to you by Amy Marks, the head of industrialized construction and strategy for Autodesk. So how this is going to work, Art of Construction Tribe, let's tee this up. So when I went back and prepping for this journey, I'm going to share with you some of the golden nuggets from re-listening to the presentation and tee up that Audrey put together through Amy. And we're going to be packaging this into three podcasts. So episode one of the deep dive series is going to be with Fred Mieske from Rosendin. And this is going to be geared towards the forward-thinking practices and philosophies that construction professionals and companies can adopt to move forward from the electrician's mind. So that's where we're going to be getting into that GUI center with Fred today. Episode two is going to be with Bill Bullock from EAS, and that's going to be geared towards the nitty-gritty details of manufacturing methods. And then our keynote to bring this home is episode three with Amy Marks, who is the keynote for this, and she is known as the queen of prefab. So what are we going to be talking about in this deep dive series? So let's get some bullet points that I'm going to be teeing up for us to go through and solve. So number one, prefab is much more than a box. And I want to talk about how we can ship much more than air in these shoeboxes. 61% of the time, projects don't end on time. And this came from the Dodge Data and Analytics and Lean Construction Institute. Why? Let's talk about assembly versus building. Subs are the manufacturers, and they've been doing this for 20 plus years, and we got to recognize that. And I'm excited to go talk with Fred about the electrical and all the cool stuff that they got going on with Rosendin today. So enough about hearing about highlighting the Kateras and their funding and the Marriotts about furniture in their boxes. Let's talk about the AEC superstars in these podcasts. And we're really going to get into MEP prefab with standard practice assemblies. This is where the money's at, tribe. So MEP is leading the way. And the current methodologies pay for waste. Let's talk about how we need to pay for value. And so Autodesk has the connectors and the pathways that can lead the way to solve things like piping and precast integrations through mapping ideal pathways. So AOC is so honored to be partnering and help to share these perspectives of these upcoming episodes and circle back at the end with Amy and discuss value mapping and connect the leaders of the tribe. Tribe, I raise my hand and I am passionate about Colorado. And when I wish there would be no more snow this year, but I hope this weekend I get a little snow. And when I'm going up that chairlift, and one of my favorite things is just sitting on the chairlift and seeing all these beautiful snowflakes, and they're all different. But tribe, we have to use Autodesk to help us and stop making snowflakes in the art of construction. Because if we keep doing a project again and again that we're not going to do again, it's really hard to move the needle. So that's what she's going to talk about. And what we're going to be solving on this journey together is the product mindset enables industrialized construction optimization. We want to talk about how we can define the products, manage them, and optimize them. This will truly unlock things like generative design, AI, machine learning, and things like that Autodesk is leading, things like Inventor and Revit, and on and on and on. So let's get out of wasting time on crappy shop drawings and all the data drop chasms, and let's go educate up front, productize to build better buildings. So let's transition into this episode and let's get into the gooey middle. Let's talk some examples and let's get into episode one of the Autodesk Deep Dive series and get to know Fred Mieske of Rosendin. Lock and load, tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
Well, I actually have two. I'm a coffee drinker, as you can tell. I'm drinking coffee now. And beer. It's a little early for beer, so that'll be later.
All right. Well, what's a beer that comes to mind right now?
Well, a beer for me would probably be a German beer, like a wheat beer, Franziskaner, awesome. Schneider, something like that.
Cool. Well, let's keep pumping the coffee, and then we can celebrate when this comes live over a good German beer, huh? Well, tell us about the favorite place you've traveled, Fred.
Well, the favorite place I've traveled probably ties to the beer. That would be Germany. I go there probably twice a year. My wife is actually German and from Germany, so we go there to visit her parents. We haven't done it this year, obviously, with the COVID, but we usually go about twice a year.
Awesome. Give us one story from traveling to Germany.
One story traveling to Germany. I guess I probably won't go into travel because I'm not the greatest traveler. I do travel a lot, but I get frustrated with inefficiencies, and I think this is something I struggle with. So we'll just talk about a place I like to go. There is actually a monastery that the monks built in 1050, and that's where one of the beers that I like, Franziskaner, is made. It's now made in Munich, but it used to be made right there, just outside of Kelheim, and that is definitely a place I go to probably once every other year just to visit. I love it. It's really great. It's a huge, huge place. Like I said, it was built in 1050. It's just insane how old the building is and how many people are there and the food. And it's a great place.
Awesome. And what is your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're trying to break down every day that we passionately call the art of construction?
I mean, I think mine are probably typical. I'm a snow skier, so I definitely ski whenever I get an opportunity. I golf, so I'm a golfer, and then I travel. So those are probably the three things that I do the most outside of working around the house.
Awesome. Well, we got to know a little bit about Fred. Tell us your background and what Rosendin's all about that led you to being the vice president of this company.
Okay. The two different pieces. So I guess I could start with Rosendin. Rosendin began as a really small family-owned business in San Jose, California. It was started in 1919. And, obviously since that time, it's just over 100 years now, we've experienced an enormous amount of growth. We've seen many peaks and valleys in the construction sector and our own. Today we're a nationwide business and we're 100% employee owned and we have revenues in excess of $2 billion annually. So that's kind of Rosendin as a whole. As far as me, I started out as an apprentice electrician in 81. Now I'm dating myself. I worked my way through, the residential high density projects. Ended up moving into the pharmaceutical and manufacturing end of the business, which is where I spent the majority of my field lifetime and work before I came into the office. I went to DeVry in Chicago during the late 80s and discovered that my true passion was really the electrical field coupled with technology and automation. I was a big technology and automation nut. And that's just, I guess I was kind of geeky. And I began my journey there, received several, which I'm still probably the most proud of, PLC certifications in advanced systems programming from Allen Bradley. Obviously, in the pharmaceutical business, everything is about PLCs and variable speed drives. So that was really my end of the world. Fast forwarding to joining Rosendin just 14 years ago. Aren't you glad I fast forwarded through that 30 years? I started out in the pre-construction group in Rosendin. And during that earliest part of the tenure is when I was asked by our current CEO, who was a division manager at the time, We had a project coming up. It was a 100-year building. They were using Revit, and it was going to be just an amazing thing. And, you know, while Rosendin had been working in AutoCAD for years through our design side of our business, we also, you know, were coordinating that way. We had never went into the Revit space. And so that was a big jump for us. And they basically told me, go out and learn everything you can learn about this because we want this job. And so that's what I did. And, you know, 14 years later, they decided to keep me, and I'm you know, now the vice president for the BIM technology division. So that's kind of how I got here.
Great story. I love that. Learn by doing in just 14 short years ago, right? The days can be long sometimes, but the years are short, right?
I knew the AutoCAD side of the world. Obviously, I used to use it for layout, nothing like we do now. There was no 3D coordination. I just used it. You know, I created 2D views and used it to lay out the crews. You know, now it's a completely different story. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, so we got to know a little bit about you, and we got this whole teed up, and you're kind of the one to launch us off on this deep dive series we're going on in here in episode one. So can you just talk a little bit more about what different products and services that you guys offer at Rosendin?
Products and services, we're a pretty diverse organization. We have a few ancillary sister companies. MPS is one. It's a modular design for the data center market. We're in the solar market very extensively. We build a lot of hospitals across the U.S. The only real residential we do would be kind of classified as high density. That would be hotel towers and a few very high-end, you know, condo type. But we don't do really any other residential. We do a lot of education. Transportation, we're heavy in sports. And of course, you know, many know that we're definitely at the center of data center construction as well.
So from your website and materials, it looks like a lot of your work involves BIM, building informational modeling. So can you talk about BIM from the perspective of an electrical contractor, what your relationship with it is, and what benefit it brings to you and your clients?
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge question in itself. It's got all kinds of tentacles. You know, the demands being placed on electrical contractors nowadays has grown exponentially from what it did just a few years ago. You know, it started out doing some preliminary layouts, doing design assist. Now we're actually spooling, manufacturing parts and pieces for these builds. We basically have to provide more and more every day for less and less time. In addition, we need to make sure that, you know, we have the tools and that we're trained to carry out those objectives for our customers and our clients. You know, those clients could be external to the organization, and they could be literally our clients that pay us. They could also be internal customers of ours, which are different operating groups that have to leverage the services that we provide. So I think when you couple those with the increasing customer requirements, shorter timelines, just-in-time delivery and designs, and then you factor in all these compressed construction schedules, you really have, you know, the perfect storm for project challenges, which we typically look at as opportunities for success. That's my positive spin on that.
All right. So what other processes or systems do you have in place that add value to your projects and separate you from the normal idea of what electricians do? And on the intro, I talk about all these things. I'm asking you to help me of these abbreviations. So I said DFM, but it's also DFMA. So design for manufacture and assembly. What are some of those processes and systems that you would guide us from the electrician's point of view?
Well, there's an enormous amount of tools, which is what we call them. When you look at these softwares, these processes, these hardware, you know, they're all just tools to allow us to do our job more efficiently. You know, we basically, from our perspective, we provide annual software and process assessments we use those to evaluate and challenge, you know, our staff to allow them to grow and also to provide better value for our customer. You know, we provide the training and support of all their daily needs, you know, total station training, AR, VR, 3D photo capture, prefabrication, packaging drawings, database management for feeders, all of those things and much more are tools that we use to help provide, you know, not only our customers, like I said, internal and external. We have a development team that works on creating add-ins for the industry's current software, Autodesk being a big one. We're a big Autodesk house. We leverage a lot of their products across our organization. But we also have to create customized, third-party add-ins for those tools that allow us to make them specific and expand on their current capability to allow them to, you know, really dive into what we need to basically just customize them. And so that's another really important component for us to succeed.
Tools, I kind of want to dive a little bit deeper and kind of talk into some of the more specific projects and you kind of help us understand. So in your data center projects that I know you guys are involved in, tell us what goes into one of these projects. And if you can kind of shed some light to the Art of Construction Tribe about what's unique about them and what type of team do you assemble for those? And why do you think they're in such high demand right now?
Well, I guess that's kind of an easy question, but can also have a lot of tentacles. If you look at some of the things that I already mentioned, and again, there's more, we could probably talk for hours on this subject. But all this requires huge amounts of data. And that data has to be stored for easy access, right? For all of our daily needs, whether it's, you know, Facebook or Rosendon trying to leverage information, we're trying to leverage and capture this data and use it in some meaningful way. These all require data centers to store, secure, and manage that information. So I think as long as the demand for data continues, which I'm confident that it will, you're going to need places to house that data. And that's going to require buildings that contain the equipment that store all of that data that we use. You know, we want to know something, we type it in, and 3 seconds later, you know, there's 50 different articles on that specific topic that we just queried. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, and it can be overwhelming, right? And that's where this platform is for that, to say, what of those 40 articles, which one should I listen or read, right? And so what are some of the unique complexities around the data center projects, and how do you manage that?
There's a lot of complexities. I got to think about that for a minute. Schedule, location, experience of your staff, not only your staff, but the staff that are available at the moment. You may have an organization of 200, but they may be fully leveraged and you may have additional work, in which case you have less experienced people. So what you do is you take some of the more experienced and you pair them up with some of the less experienced, and now you have a little bit of dilution, right? And so that's a challenge in itself. So experienced staff on the construction site, you basically manage them with, you know, a team. And that team would consist of project managers, field foremen, superintendents, quality assurance people, safety, a BIM, procurement, cost accounting. I mean, that's just kind of the core group. Then you have to build a plan around that. And then you have to be able to execute that plan. And not only do you have to do all of those things and get all those right people there, but you have to navigate other obstacles that are common to the construction industry to successfully navigate and succeed. And, you know, those obstacles, again, have to do with schedule, location, availability, all the things that I mentioned before. So, yeah, that's probably the most condensed version I could give you of that question.
Yeah, and I think that's a great answer. And you say, what is the art of construction? And it's lifelong learners and leaders of the tribe for contractors and affiliates to grow their business. And that's tough, right? And how do we figure that out? And so contractors and affiliates, like, we put a lot of work in to say, who is this podcast for? And we went on the word affiliates because the affiliates are really changing, and we're honored to have Autodesk putting us on this microphone and coming together to say, how do we better build better buildings, right? And so one of the questions I want to get your take on, in what capacity are you working with outside architects and or designers on these projects? And then kind of talk with us about other trades and how you're coordinating with them and sharing data, which is something I love to get people's take on, how you actually work together to share this data from these data centers you talked about.
Sure. Well, I can't get specific on the exact architects, designers, and projects. I can tell you that we work at many different levels with architects and engineering firms. We do an enormous amount of design build ourselves. We do a lot of projects prime, and we actually sub out other areas of the work. We also act as a peer review for other companies. We can go in and provide the engineering design some pre-design coordination with our forces, meaning not only our design staff, but also our field staff, our BIM staff, our project management staff, estimating. So we can provide a lot of support to a lot of those different areas of our industry to help them leverage areas where they may not be as strong, or perhaps they're just out of capacity. So that's really what it's about. The other part of your question was about trades. The same would apply to the trades. There's a lot of joint ventures that we do with some of our, I guess what you would call competitors, but we've actually formed good relationships with other large competitors where it's taken to companies our size to be able to just do the volume of work that needs to be done. So we'll get in there, we'll kind of decide who's going to do what, and then we split those responsibilities out. That really leads to the third part of your question, which is how you coordinate those and how do you share the data? How you coordinate them. In our particular case, we use, many Autodesk products. We use Navis Manage for our coordination. We use Revit for our authoring software that allows us to be able to draw and build the systems that we want to put into the building, be able to coordinate them and be able to make sure that we're hitting that target value design in terms of cost.
So I want to tell a quick story of kind of when I'm listening to you talk through to say, how do you collaborate that team and manage all this stuff? And you don't know by what you don't know what you don't know, and you're jaded by what you think you know. And pre the world of COVID, Autodesk has what they call Autodesk University. And I was in a spot where I'm like, I've heard of Autodesk, but I grew up in supply channel and day-to-day owning a window and door company and trying to say, okay, there's this paradigm shift of crappy plans to where there's this thing called Autodesk that has all these tools, right? And either there's so many different levels of knowing those tools, right? And so I was just a fish out of water, and I went to Autodesk University. It was just like blew my mind of all this stuff. And that's when I really realized the different silos of AEC to MEP to all these different things we're talking about. But at the end of the day, how does Rosendin balance the need for standardized manufacturing processes while being able to accommodate different types of custom builds and also working with a Tasmanian Devon that shows up and said, I don't use the tool, but how do we integrate these different tools?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. And to be honest with you, there is not a simple answer. There's a lot of different components to that question. And I think this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is, what does a company like us or our competitors, for example, have to do to be able to succeed for our customers? And, you know, we do it personally, Rosen, in a lot of different forms. We have projects where we just build them, you know, they're stick built from the ground up. It's really just we jump in there and we do it. And some of our largest projects that we've ever done for our customers, we've had to roll up our sleeves and take this hybrid approach where parts of the building we were building old school, and other parts we were doing where we knew where we could succeed, we were going to do it. And where we couldn't, we didn't waste the time doing it. Do I think at the end of the day, when we get down the road, that that's what we want? No, I think we want to pre-plan our work to the extent we're able, because obviously the more we pre-plan our work, you know, the less mistakes there are, the lower the cost is, the schedule is improved. There's a whole lot of things that factor into that. And it gets me to the next piece, which is the prefabrication and the procurement part. So when you're able to prefabricate things, you're able to ensure that not only do they meet the quality requirements and the design requirements of what you want, that they're, but as you said, coming from the supply chain, you're able to make sure that you get it in the time that you need and that it meets the quality that you want. So it's packaged the way you need it to be able to succeed. And the only way you can do that is by having internal standards and processes that you live by. And so that's another component that requires an enormous amount of pre-planning. It's not stick built, right? That's a different show, different channel. Modular power skids, we have a wholly owned subsidiary, a sister company of ours, that specializes in modular construction for mechanical, electrical integration. They do commissioning, coordination to design. That is one way. That just happens to be us. It doesn't mean that we don't use other resources as well. That's a third way that we have, you know, these many different tentacles to how we provide value for the industry and our customers as a whole. So that's just three off the top. I could probably sit here most of the afternoon and give you more, but that's kind of three big ones.
Yeah, I love it. And could you maybe share with the Art of Construction tribe some of your key successes that you've seen, for example, on these data center projects?
Yeah, I mean, when you're looking at, because so for me, there's pluses and negatives, right, to everything we do. When we make a decision to do this, it may have some negative effect somewhere else along the chain. But it really, you kind of have to figure out what is the most best fit for your current situation. So, I mean, the standards would be reduce cost. Obviously, when you can pre-plan and prepare, you're going to be able to reduce your costs, provided there isn't a lot of negative factors, which I'll bring up in a minute. The schedules are more streamlined. You're able to meet those schedules. You're able to follow those schedules and adhere to those schedules better when everybody know who's on first and where people are at. You know, another component of that is safety. There's a huge improvement to safety when you have a plan to build your job and you're not in there jumping around stick building the job, because when you are stick building the job and you're more old school, some of those things that are negative are gonna rear their ugly head a lot more than if you're planning for something. So, you know, probably the last one that I would mention is improved or better collaboration between more traditional construction projects. Like I said before, the more you're able to plan and prepare, the better you're able to collaborate in most cases.
Sure. And so I'm always intrigued to ask and find out, because there's a lot of us, and I raise my hand and say, still trying to figure out a lot of this stuff of switching from, you'd said, old school to kind of forward thinking, and you know, all that you said, you use a lot of the tools from Autodesk. So what sort of internal company practices and philosophies led Rosenden to adopt all these forward thinking construction processes like BIM, prefab, and design build that you've been talking about?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, we've been on a journey in the 14 years I've been here that started with our last CEO, to our current CEO. And that journey has really been one of self-improvement, continuously improving and learning. We are truly a lean organization in the sense that it's the way we think. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you everything we do is perfect, because we all know that that's not true. But we do know that we can win more than we lose when we follow those principles. And you know, we have a set of core values that are ingrained in our process, we believe in, and we follow faithfully. And that's, you know, we care about each other, our customers, we listen, and we share, we innovate, and we excel at those things. And those are our focuses and our core values that help drive a continuous improvement in our organization. That doesn't mean that there's no infighting and things, you know, that we're not challenged, but it is a constant pressure to do the right thing. And so those philosophies require from us that we, you know, constantly try to improve, not only within ourselves, but each other every day. And that creates further accountability and more educational opportunities for growth as an organization and as an individual.
I love that. So let's talk industry-wide. Who do you think is best positioned within construction companies to enact the type of changes and improvements that you've done at Rosendin? So who should owners be listening to, and who should be doing the talking?
It's a really good question. When I think about owners, when I put myself in the owner's hat, the owners are hearing, and they have their own opinions on what's going to add value to them and what they think is important. And then each other area of expertise, whether it be the design architectural industry, you know, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, we all have our vision of what is perfect for us. And I think what has to happen is that those have to come together. So when you think about that, that leads me to another project delivery method that I think is truly important. When you look at the design build market, that, you know, occurred long ago when I first got into the business. My first familiarity was kind of understanding what the customer's requirements were, bringing all of our guns to bear, taking some risk in that and saying, you know, we'll give you $100,000 to build this. And we would continue to, I'm just using that as a number. We would kind of give them a plan and an idea, and we would work together to get that. Well, that was the precursor to IPD. And so getting to the main part of my point, I think IPD is really a fantastic project delivery model, especially as we move forward in this industry, because instead of keeping us all coming at the project from different angles, it forces us to all sit on the same side of the picnic table. And we all are forced to look at where we want to go as opposed to where we are individually. And so I think that's really important. I think that, you know, companies need to invest in not only monetarily, but philosophically in the education and training that's required for the teams to succeed and for the organization.
So as an influencer and most of the time a disruptor, when I get inside of Fred's head, because I love where you're going with this, I have to ask this question and want to get your take. Okay. So there are people out there that who are afraid that if the building industry turns into a set of standardized manufacturing processes, a product-led approach versus a project-centric approach, in fact, they say that removes the art from the art of construction, there won't be as much creativity and skilled artistry in buildings anymore. Fred, what do you say to people out there that may have that fear?
You know, this is something that I've struggled with myself internally, coming from the field, and that I know many others. I think for me personally, I told you in the beginning, I'm kind of a technology geek. So for me, if there's some new shiny thing, I'm going to have a tendency to gravitate towards it. And I'm not saying that's a good thing and everyone should do it.
I hear
that's
you.
That's just me.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that if you change the approach, that changes the perception. And if you change the perception, then you can change the culture of your idea or your premise. And I think that that's really, really important for people to understand. I don't think that, you know, that we're going to lose what we are or who we are. I don't think it's going to reduce us to, you know, a group of automatons. It's going to allow us to focus on areas that require greater critical thinking skills for the specific thing at hand. And, it's going to allow more flexibility, and we can mitigate some of the other challenges that exist in our space. And those other challenges are some of the things we outlined before. Getting the right team with the right level of experience to the job. The labor shortages that we're facing in our industry, is really a challenge. So I think by not being so afraid, it's going to allow us to grow to a new level. And I really encourage people, if you're product centric, you really have to think differently and become more outcome versed. And that's kind of where I live. And I think if you can do that, that those fears you're going to see are just not going to be there.
I love that. Don't be afraid to grow and be outcome based. And I think growing up in the art of construction, it's hard to make those philosophy changes because you don't know what you don't know and you're jaded by what you think. You know, I've always done it this way. And I was trained from the person who he always did it this way. And that person was trained that way, right? And so the question we always ask as we're working out closing this first episode into Deep Dive with Autodesk is, what is your crystal ball for what we always talk about as connecting the right technology to the right handshakes, right? And because there's so many tools out there, and that's where we're honored to be here with Autodesk to talk about how they're taking all these tools and building platforms that you talked about. So what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Well, technology to me allows for all the things that I just told you I'm passionate about. I'm not going to tell you that I'm not afraid of change. I'm not going to tell you sometimes I don't think, gosh, they're going to replace me. When I look at the young people that I hire today, I'm like, these guys, they're so much brighter than I was at their age. It blows my mind. But it takes us back to another part of our conversation. I didn't have the ability to pick up my phone and dial up a question and have it answer me in 14 different languages in 5 seconds. I had to read books and learn, and not only learn, but I had to remember. So I came from a different place. So I do get those fears, and I have them myself. But fortunately, like I said, I'm such a technology nut that I always believe something's going to make it my job easier and better. And so I guess to answer that question, I would say it's going to allow for better standardization. And that standardization will reduce the time that we need for designing the buildings and improving our quality of how we build. It's actually going to make us better. Are we going to still face challenges that I mentioned earlier in relation to staff and location experience? Yeah. None of those things are going to change. As a matter of fact, they're going to grow. So when you talk about technologies and leveraging tools, it's critical to remember while we're losing in one area, we're gaining in another. And so that is evolution. And you can't sit there and be afraid of it and hide behind a curtain because it's coming. And I've been saying this about Revit and about BIM since the beginning. When I first was asked to start this journey, I heard so many people, we don't need that, it doesn't work. I still hear that to this day.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't work. And the truth is it's not that we fail it. I mean, it's not that it fails us, it's we fail it. We don't, follow the right procedures. You think about if you're a pilot, the pilots get in and they do these checklists and they get these certifications and they have to do takeoffs and landings every 90 days. Well, they already learned, but they have to do it to stay proficient. And they're just willing to do that because they know they have to. So I think it's really important. Anyway, I'm rambling and I apologize, but that's
gold, man. What I heard is that you're saying you're giving the good tentacles of saying embrace change, and the next thought leaders are coming in a So Scott Hicken, my marketing director that put this all together, he taught me that I'm a digital immigrant. I'm just like you, Fred. I love technology to the point where I will go try something and say, let's do this before it's a proven process. And I think that's what you're talking about of the, when you're flying, is you got to make sure you're remembering everybody's proven process. Cause what are we trying to do? We don't want the plane to crash, right? And they've got pretty good about the plane not crashing. But the digital immigrant versus the digital native, that's what I heard from you. If we have to embrace these digital natives, that when I went to Autodesk University, I was a fish out of water in a way I loved it. And I can't wait till COVID ends and I can be back on the stage with Autodesk and other cool partners like you to say, let's bring these next superstars that are the users working in the business versus the leaders helping be above working on the business when you talk about what you're doing there. So in closing, I want to leave you with one more golden nugget that you got to give us, Fred. What is that one thing for contractors and affiliates to go out there and crush it and grow their business and work within this amazing Autodesk empire that we're all working to try to figure out and move the needle forward?
Well, I think you have to be prepared to invest. And I think I said this earlier, but not only monetarily, but philosophically in the education and the training that's required to succeed in your mission, whatever that mission is. And so when you think about the younger folks, they need to be prepared to spend that time and that learning. And some of the things that they're going to need are individuals like us, especially me, that are older, that just have a lot of miles under their hood. We just have a ton of miles and there's still a lot that we have to offer. We are not as fast and not as agile in leveraging technology like the younger generation. But you know what? That's okay, because they find it difficult to navigate our industry without us too. So I think we're at a really great spot. If companies are smart, they're going to, when you look at my staff, I have a staff of over 200. And I would say if you averaged out my staff in terms of age, which would be an HR violation, but if you were to do that, you would find that the vast majority of them is probably 30 or under. It's going to be in there. We're talking a big difference, right? Some of them even younger than that. So I think it's a great opportunity. It's a good positive storm for us to come together and, you know, be able to do that. And I think the other part to that is there's no magic. It takes hard work and patience to get to where you want to go, even when you're experienced. If you want to say I'm experienced, it still takes patience for me. Rely on your industry partners. Autodesk is a great example. And we have many other manufacturers and strategic partnerships that we have formed as an organization and as a department. They use us to help develop new tools for the industry. And we do the same thing. We help them by understanding what new tools may become available or are being dreamed about. And then we figure out how we would need to modify our internal processes to be able to allow that to successfully and efficiently occur.
Fred, outstanding. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us your story.
I don't hear that very often.
Well, you got it from me today.
Well, you like to talk like me. So see, you and I could probably spend weeks just chattering away.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
So much gold there. Art of Construction Tribe, that's where I love getting to meet new people and saying we have to look ourselves in the mirror. But at the end of the day, I don't know how many magic wands there are. And it's blending the digital tools with the properly way to get shit done. So what a great way to start this out. Kudos to Autodesk for getting this all put together. And so I can't wait to go on another episode 2 with Bill Bullock, where we're going to gear that episode towards the nitty-gritty details of manufacturing methods, and then continue to pull this all together. And then we get to bring in Amy Marks. She is a superstar. Our keynote of this whole thing, where the queen of prefab is going to come in and close the loop. So I can't wait. Hopefully you got some great golden nuggets from that. And I can't wait to see you on the next one, Tribe. Crush it out there.